Hello, everyone, and welcome to Food Disruptors, an IFT podcast that brings you the latest insights and perspectives from some of the brightest minds in the science of food. In each episode, our guests discuss the ever-changing intersection of entrepreneurship, innovation, and science, and their role in advancing our global food system. This week, we're partnering with IFT's International Division to explore the world of food foundations. It's a play on words that focuses on foundations that work on improving global food and agriculture, and also that food is the foundation for global health, well-being, and prosperity. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden, and today we're talking to the Rockefeller Foundation about their program, YieldWise. Please help me welcome Donna Rosa, who's the International Business Development Services Consultant and IFT International Division Volunteer Leader, and Rafael Flor, Director of YieldWise. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you, Matt, for having us.
So, Donna, why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Donna Rosa, again, and I'm the Feeding Tomorrow Liaison for the International Division here at IFT. I'm also the organizer of this podcast series, Food Foundations. I work in international development, helping small farms, farm organizations, and food processors with the business and commercial aspects of their operations. And I'm very familiar with the Rockefeller Foundation because I'm working on a project with them right now.
Excellent. Well, definitely glad to have you on here today to help me kind of learn a little bit more about YieldWise. So, Rafael, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background?
My name is Rafael Flor. I am a director with the food team at the Rockefeller Foundation, and I lead the initiative on food loss and food waste that we call it YieldWise, or being wise about the yield.
So Rockefeller's history of supporting food securities dates all the way back to the 1950s and the Green Revolution. Can you tell us more about your roots and how your food policy has evolved?
No, certainly. As you know, we are one of the oldest foundations in the world. We have 105 years of existence, and our investments into agriculture and the food sector are very wide and deep. You probably know that some of our investments have resulted in a very impactful change in the food system. What we know now as the demonstration plot was an innovation due to some investments of the Rockefeller Foundation, the establishment of the International Agricultural Research System, including CIMIT, SIAT, and the specialized centers working on rice, maize, and wheat are part of our investment. So for over 100 years, what we have been doing is to improve the well-being of humanity through investments into the agricultural sector. I probably you know as well by the investments into the Green Revolution, whereby investing into increasing agricultural productivity and increasing the amount of food that the system produced, we averted very many crises to the point that the father of the Green Revolution, Dr. Norman Borlaug, who was a staffer of the Rockefeller Foundation, won the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts. What has happened since then is that while we have reduced the levels of undernourishment, if you look at any data right now, by far we have we are in a better place. We live better lives. People are less hungry today, despite the increases in undernourishment that has happened over the past 2 to 3 years. The levels, the rates, the prevalence are very low compared to what they were in the 80s, in the 70s, in the 60s even. So that trend is really good. But what we are realizing is that focusing on the amount of food is not enough. It is a precondition, but it has to go beyond that. We need to focus on nourishing a growing population and doing it in a sustainable manner, in a manner that you know, it includes the culture of and the well-being of the producers. And I think that's something that we as a global community are struggling with right now.
I just want to follow up on a question of something that you mentioned, Raphael, early on. You mentioned demonstration plots. And this is something that is widely used in the aid industry, but I think IFTers may not know what that is. Can you tell us how you developed that and exactly what those are?
Yes. So back in the 50s, some of our investments in the south in the south of the U.S. in the agricultural systems there were geared towards showing new agricultural techniques and new agricultural varieties and the impact that could have in terms of production to farmers in the Midwest. So the idea was that you would establish two plots, one using what is called now good agronomic practices and a better package of inputs, and another one where you would follow your traditional methods, farming methods. And you would compare both of them and see the difference. And that's a way for you to change behaviors because you learn by doing rather than learning in a class. And then you can compare and contrast and then adopt what you think is best for your own farm and for your own system. And that has had a tremendous impact if you think about it, you know, from the south of the U.S. to what we are seeing now in sub-Saharan Africa, in Latin America, and in Asia.
Yeah, I think it's hard to overestimate the importance of that because you're working, at least I've worked in rural areas in Africa and elsewhere, and you have to show the farmers what the difference is, of your practices versus what they've been doing. And once they see that, you know, they're very skeptical to begin with. You know, here's somebody coming in trying to, you know, tell us what to do. And when you show them via a demonstration plot, it says everything. So that technique is used everywhere now. So I wanted to just sort of highlight that it was groundbreaking.
And I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I would be skeptical as well, you know. There was a saying by Dr. Norman Borlaug is, take it to the farmer. The farmer is your customer. Talk to him, show him, you know, what needs to be done, and he would decide whether to adopt it or not. And please remember that in some places of the world, before the Green Revolution and even today, some farmers are below subsistence levels. So these decisions might be, very crucial because the quantity of food that it will be available for them for a given year depends on those decisions. So again, you know, we sometimes underestimate how there the situation is and how these decisions could have a positive or a negative impact on their lives.
No, I would just say the negative impact could be disaster. So there's a lot at stake with that. So
well, I think, you know, this really circles back really well to Raphael, what you said about, you know, focusing on the amount of food isn't necessarily enough. You really have to focus on nourishing a community and doing so in a sustainable manner. So I did want to take a chance to learn from you about the Rockefeller's programs, YieldWise Food Loss and YieldWise Food Waste, and really how these programs came to be.
No, I'm happy to share, you know, some of the work that we are carrying out. You probably have seen, and for your for the listeners of the podcast, over the past 2 to 3 years, the evidence that has that's being gathered around not only the food systems, but also in terms of nutrition, has increased exponentially. And here I'll tell you a little bit more what I'm referring to. I think at the moment we have a window of opportunity where many of the stakeholders in the food system are realizing that we need to make adjustments into the system. And you see it on the demand side from a population of millennials that they are very concerned about the environment and the choices that they make in terms of the food that they procure and consume, to corporations and multinationals that they are very concerned about the sustainability of their investments and businesses and the kinds of business models that they are promoting, not only here at home, but also abroad. To organizations and multilaterals, investing more and smarter in terms of sustainability and nutritional outcomes. So to give you an example in terms of food loss and food waste, the World Resource Institute publishes a report through their Champions 12.3 group every year that summarizes the progress that the global community is making towards the Sustainable Development Goal Target 12.3, which is reducing food loss and food waste. And what is interesting about that report is that the private sector, it is on the lead on this specific target. Not only that they have been able to prioritize and set very clear goals on what they would like to achieve, but also they are investing heavily in terms of making their processes more efficient. And here again, it has an element of sustainability, but also it has an economic incentive that is very strong for these multinationals. They can see it and feel it in their bottom line. Governments, on the other hand, have not been as forward-looking as corporates. They have set some targets and goals, some of them with a level of ambition much higher than others, but still we don't see enough action on the ground. We don't see a pipeline of investments on critical things like infrastructure and value chain efficiency that it would be required to be made for this target to be achieved. So again, while progress has been made, I think we still face challenges in terms of prioritization, in terms of level of investment, and ultimately results.
So what you said, Raphael, makes total sense, and I think it's an excellent approach that you're taking. But I'm wondering about the challenges that these initiatives are facing right now. You know, what are you up against with YieldWise food loss and food waste?
I think this is an arbitrary distinction, but food loss relates are inefficiencies that happens in a given value chain from production up to when the food gets to the consumer. And here again is just trying to identify those points within those value chains where there is leakage and where there is inefficiency. While food waste is more of, you know, how food is managed on the consumer end, from, you know, the point that the consumer takes that food from a supermarket or a market and it's being consumed. And here again, you know, we have a high level of inefficiency. We tend to buy more food that we need, and we tend to not store that food that properly. And also, you know, there is an element around the labels that is being addressed right now through different groups. Some of a combination of those factors makes us to waste quite a bit of good food.
Can you just distinguish between the YieldWise food loss and food waste? I believe the food waste has to do more with developed countries, and the food loss has to do with developing countries. Is that right?
Yes. So if you look at, you know, high income South Asia, we have a problem with both food loss and food waste. So it's not necessarily, and even here in the U.S., we have an issue with food loss, despite being a very efficient system in terms of production.
So Raphael, you've given us a really good overview of the programs around food loss and food waste at the Rockefeller Foundation and what the challenges are that you face. But really, it seems like cloth and food waste are such a hot issue, there's a lot of people working on it. How is the Rockefeller Foundation's approach to these issues different from others that are tackling food loss and food waste?
I think we, in our case, what we try to do with our investments is to, if you wish, catalyze a movement for action. And specifically in terms of yield-wise and more on the food loss portfolio more than the food waste, what we have been working on is on a strategy that has three main pillars. As I describe the pillars, you will get an idea of how our approach is slightly different from others. The first pillar has been in terms of strengthening the knowledge of evidence. And here we are doing two critical things in the first bucket. The first one is we are still talking about levels of waste between 30 and 40%, but we don't have enough visibility and granularity under those numbers on a commodity by commodity basis. And we don't really understand well enough yet what kind of actions are needed to be taken to reduce that level of loss. So we have been investing heavily in terms of that knowledge creation and evidence gathering. So that's one line of work or one bucket of investments for us. The second one has been around making finance available for these types of investments. And here we have been working on two fronts. The first front is financing for the public sector. And during the spring meetings together with the World Bank, we launched the first SDG 1, 2, 3 bond, which is the SDG target 12.3. And the bond had an initial subscription of $300 million. And the idea is to make that concessional finance available to countries that prioritize this agenda and have a very concrete plan of investment tied to it. The second component or the other side of the same coin is financing for SMEs and cooperatives. And here we have been working with IFAD and Rabobank to developing a financing mechanism that would allow businesses to make this a priority and invest into better ways to deal with loss in general. And then the third bucket has been more in terms of raising awareness with both the corporate and the public through a couple of platforms. The first, you know, being the Champions 12.3 group, where we can have very targeted and strategic discussions with corporates, policymakers, and the like. And the second one, looking at faith-based networks, those networks to amplify the message and to bring it as a top priority.
It sounds like you've got some very creative approaches, you know, in terms of the development finance, which is sort of all the rage right now, you know, with the faith-based approaches. It's very interesting, you know, the things that you're trying to do. If you had unlimited resources, you know, is there anything else that you would like to focus on?
I think for us, we would like to have a pipeline of investments. One of the things that we are doing in one of the publications is to, and also with the World Bank and IFAD, is to identify those hotspots, because we have to be very targeted and we have to be, we need to sequence our investments. So to give you an example, you know, in terms of food loss and food waste, there are two value chains that that raise in terms of the hotspot analysis. The first one is rice, because of all the, in terms of green gas house emissions, is one of the top contributors with nitrogen oxide. So reducing the waste would have not only a loss, would not only have an impact in terms of the amount of food available, but also in terms of GHG emission reductions. And the same thing is for meat. So I would like us to start to look at, more carefully into those hotspots in terms of regions and commodities, and see specific solutions that could be implemented. So that's one thing that I would like us to do a little bit more of. And the second one would be in terms of strengthening value chains in low and middle income countries. Again, I think most of these development challenges will be solved by strengthening those value chains. We need to look at both investments in terms of value chain infrastructure, from warehouses to processing plants to packaging houses to better roads to off-grid energy solutions, to value chain efficiency investments around better data management, better transport and logistics, better connectivity in terms of the different segments of a given value chain. So those are areas where I would like us, if we were have to have an unlimited amount of resources, to look into more detail and make additional investments.
You mentioned earlier about, governments lagging behind private sector in terms of loss and waste. Would there be a way for you to sort of find a way to get those moving a little bit better and getting them on board?
We would like to, but I think it's governments face many challenges and many urgencies. And I think, right now the best way to address this issue is by bringing it under the integrated umbrella of climate, food safety, food security in certain places, and also nutritional security. Again, if we go back to the previous point that I made, if we are to nourish a growing population, we'll need to consume more fruits, vegetables, whole grains. And especially for fruits and for vegetables, these are perishable crops, which will require a completely different management system and value chain infrastructure. So again, these issues are tied together. And we need to start to think in a more comprehensive manner, rather than thinking about these as different silos.
Yeah, it's really clear that, this is, food loss and waste are just such multifaceted issues with, a lot of different disciplines could play into that. And there's a lot of work to be done and a lot of problems to solve. And Raphael, IFT members really cover all the many disciplines within food science and technology. And I'm curious about how, food scientists and technologists could help you achieve your goals around food loss and food waste.
I think food scientists have a great role to play into all of this. To start with, issues around food safety need to be addressed in most of these markets in low and middle income countries. And that's something that food scientists do extremely well. The same thing in terms of increasing processing capacity, using better methods that maintain the nutritional content of these foods. The same in terms of better packaging solutions that are not based on plastic, or that preserve foods for a shelf life for a longer period of time. I think, at the center of some of the challenges that we are facing, we'll need the science that food scientists could bring, and the solutions that they could promote and implement in different markets.
Yeah, I think that all makes really good sense. Donna, is there anything you'd like to add as we kind of wrap up here?
Yeah, no, I wanted to first thank Raphael. You gave us some really good information and a very good overview, you know, of the whole loss and waste area. But I also want to reiterate what you just said about the use of food science and technology in this area. I think it's completely underutilized. And I would like to see more organizations, more donor organizations, foundations, and so forth, looking to food scientists to help them with what you were just saying, better food safety, better packaging, you know, extending shelf life into, you know, to provide foods during hungry seasons and so forth. So I just, you know, wanted to reiterate that. And IFT, we're going to be working on developing an area to do just that.
No, that's wonderful, and we need much more of that. Again, you know, if you think about it, we produce more than enough food at the moment, in terms of calories, at least.
Yes.
So it's how do we preserve that food, and how do we release some of those resources to produce more nutritious foods, and how to keep those, you know, store with a good nutritional content for longer periods of time. So those are challenges that certainly we need your help with.
And that's exactly what food scientists could do.
Yeah,
exactly.
There we go, call to action.
Yeah.
So Raphael, do you have any final thoughts as we wrap up?
No, just to thank you for the time that you have provided me to share some of these ideas with you all and with your listeners, and to ask you to continue being engaged into this discussion and into finding solutions to these challenges.
Excellent. Well, Raphael, thank you for your time and your thoughts as well. And thank you to our listeners. If you're enjoying Food Disruptors, please let us know by leaving a review on iTunes or by connecting with IFT. You can find us at IFT on Twitter and by searching the Institute of Food Technologists, or IFT, on Facebook and LinkedIn. Thanks for listening to Food Disruptors. I'm your host, Matt Teagarden. Have a great day, everyone.